This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
So welcome back, and we will have the opportunity for a little Q&A and sharing of experiences, but I wanted to offer up, go a little bit deeper on this concept of glimmers. And it's not a massive slideshow, but just like the visualizations we just experienced, I'm going to share a couple of slides just to keep me on track, because I can ramble, and also that I think will be, you know, fruitful for us all to take a look at. So the concept of glimmers first came to me from the psychotherapist LCSW Deb Dana, and pardon my wandering mind, but look at this glimmer of light on my face right now. That's kind of fun. Thanks for showing up, glimmer of light through the curtains. So Deb Dana has implemented the polyvagal theory, Stephen Porges' theory on nervous system regulation, neuroception. We'll talk a little bit about what that means. She has popularized polyvagal theory, made it very accessible, written a book called Anchored, that really names what's happening in the threat defense system in our bodies, the way we move through the world, experiencing threat and safety throughout our day. Glimmers are those micro moments. We just went deep on this, when our biology is in a place of connection or regulation, which cues our nervous system to feel safe or calm. And some thoughts on this. Causes and conditions, context. We are being activated, shifted into reactivity throughout our days. Our current context feeds us a constant stream of often toxic information. These things have changed, have upped the game of threat and safety in our nervous systems. As you likely know from your mindfulness practice, our minds are incredible time travelers. They love to travel through time and space. Our body and breath and nervous system can only be in this moment. However, when the mind wanders, the nervous system doesn't know the difference. When it wanders to an unhelpful place, to a dark alley of imagination, whether that's in memory or in future casting, the nervous system responds to that imagining as if it were happening in the present moment. Our mindfulness practice can bring us back to the body, the breath, what we're feeling in the throat, the heart, the belly, how that's impacting the warmth in our cheeks or the blood rushing through our ears, paying attention to the direct experience that we're having in the present moment can actually be quite soothing. And this is why our mindfulness practice can benefit us, can get us out of those unhelpful places. And I want to name, this feels really important, glimmers are not a way to be delusional or avoidant. Let me say that again. Glimmers are not a way to be delusional or avoidant. Glimmers can offer us some restoration of balance in our nervous system. Because we are experiencing reactivity and activation with the level of opportunities to witness adversity, both individual and collective, at a very high level, and because as human beings, we have a negativity bias, you probably are familiar with this, we prioritize threatening events, threatening people, places, and things 5 to 1 to the pleasant. So you can think of that like For every hard moment I have with my spouse or colleague or child or, you know, the person at the grocery store, I need five positive events to restore my attention, my nervous system back to baseline or to safety, or to feeling like it's okay to connect with others. Negativity bias causes a lot of psychological distress. Practicing with glimmers, having an active practice of scanning for the moments of safety and release and relief can restore our body's nervous system to homeostasis, a place of balance. I have a colleague who is a somatic experiencing practitioner. So she's a psychotherapist whose work is based in regulating the nervous system. And it's a modality for healing trauma. And I'm not an expert in somatic experiencing. I'm much more of a mindfulness-based practitioner. Farah Sultan and I have had a lot of conversations about the modality that she uses in her practice for trauma healing versus modalities that I use. And she shared with me at one point how clients would come into her practice misunderstanding and misusing mindfulness and breath practices as a way to suppress their natural nervous system responses. It's like, if you need to cry, if you need to scream, if you need to rage, we need to do these things. So she named it as, we don't want to gaslight our nervous system. We don't want to tell our body that a natural response to the context that we're in is something that needs to be suppressed. So I want to be really clear from the get-go that glimmers are not a way to pivot to something positive because we're avoiding the negative or the nature of reality as it is. Glimmers are a way to simply harness and savor the moments of relief that do arise in our lives, the moments of relief, goodness, and safety, to pay attention to them in a mindful way. We're not fabricating them. We're simply noticing and aware of these micro moments. I think glimmers are really the embodiment of Mary Oliver's instructions on living a life. I know us mindfulness teachers quote Mary Oliver too much, but this is a pretty perfect one for the glimmers. Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it. So, overwhelm. Who's feeling a little bit of overwhelm these days? Jon Kabat-Zinn describes overwhelm as the all too common feeling that our lives are, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to move. I don't know if you can see the, there we go. Our lives are somehow unfolding faster than the human nervous system and psyche are able to manage well. And this comes from Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart. The second quote is from Brené. And I agree, this really resonates with her. It's all unfolding faster than my nervous system and psyche can manage it. Oops, did I stop the share? No, I just toggled my screen. Pardon me, everybody. And I'm not gonna pendulate into reactivity here. I'm just gonna get my screen back. Okay. So when we are witnessing a lot of stressful events, when we're experiencing them firsthand, when we've been inside of systems and contexts that have been traumatic in a chronic, ongoing way, based on social identity, based on culture, based on family of origin, based on relational challenges, based on infinite realms of the human experience that can start to wear down our capacity to bear witness, to feel like we can keep going. And this may be familiar to a lot of UCLA folks. This is inspired by Dan Siegel, and Dan Siegel and Pat Ogden. Our window of tolerance is when we're feeling safe, connected, at ease, those micro moments, those glimmers, we feel it for a moment. But when we're in a wide window of tolerance, we're at our optimal functioning. We feel like we can focus on the task at hand. Our mind is not wandering, and we can stay in a place of reason, judgment, responsiveness. When we've been through challenging events on an ongoing basis, when we're witnessing terrible things, this window can get very thin. And that can look like we're going into fight or flight, we're reactive, we feel angry, out of control, or we can start to feel shut down and numb and frozen. The good news is there are extraordinary, ordinary ways to increase our capacity to keep going, to widen that window of tolerance. The ordinary magic of resilience, as defined by Ann Mastin of the University of Minnesota, who's done a lot of resiliency studies, is simple social connection and strategies for self-regulation. So it's not extraordinary processes, but the simple act of connecting with others. We're wired for connection. We're pro-social beings. From an evolutionary biology perspective, we understand that humans are interdependent on each other and need each other to survive and thrive. This is why our mindfulness practice is so important for us collectively. When we can create a sense of safety and trust within ourselves through our practice of paying attention to this moment, bringing our awareness back to this very moment, when we can offer ourselves strategies like glimmers, like pressing our feet into the floor or our hands into our thighs, and hear what I was naming earlier when I was speaking to Deborah about visualization, a really simple practice for bringing the soothing nervous system back online is just looking around your environment. And you might want to just take a moment to do this, because I will name, even just seeing the word trauma can be a bit activating. So let's just take a moment to look around your environment and name what you see. You don't have to say it out loud, but just if there's a light on the ceiling or window, maybe you name the colors that you see. It's really not a cognitive act. We're just reminding our nervous system where we are. Our eyes are our nervous system's window on the world. And as we take a look around at our environment, if we're in a context of safety, it can be quite calming to the nervous system. And another friendly reminder, if we are not in a context of safety, our nervous system is doing what it needs to do. It is running out of that burning building. It is raging. It is defending ourselves. Thank you, nervous system. That is why when we are activated, it's called the sympathetic nervous system, because it's sympathetic to us. It gets us out of trouble. Parasympathetic is when we're safe. The opposite, we can be at ease. Our heart rate becomes slower, our breath becomes more regulated. So yeah, just giving that a try, pressing into the feet, feeling your seat, feeling the connection, feeling the air on your skin, just letting the eyes wander. Another really nice practice, this came to me through Res Momenicum's, my grandmother's hands, is just to take a simple twist and look over each shoulder. That lets the nervous system know there's nobody back there. So these are glimmers. And another one, folks who've sat with me before that I like to offer up is straw breath, which you've witnessed me either auditory or visually take a deep breath in and breathe out as if through a straw. It can be extremely regulating to the nervous system. A longer exhale than an inhale, according to Stephen Porges and polyvagal theory researchers, activates the parasympathetic nervous system, brings that soothing part of our autonomic nervous system online. So these are some strategies for self-regulation. And here's the catch. When we can create that sense of safety and trust in ourselves and in our own nervous system, we can become trustworthy to others, and we can enhance part two, that second component of the ordinary magic of resilience, social connection, which is so essential for our feeling that we're going to be okay, to know that we can be connected in community to other safe human beings who are walking this path with us. So when we are embodying safety and trustworthiness, UCLA teacher Matthew Brensilver, I'm taking a course right now in Buddhist psychology with him. He says Buddhist psychology is really about becoming trustworthy. And I'm extrapolating from that definition. When there's trust in this bodily system through our mirror neurons, it's contagious to others. I trust myself. I am trustworthy. Our presence, our capacity to be with the discomfort that's offered to us and stay with it, there's a lot of trustworthiness in that. When we're in a place of safety and trust, when our window of tolerance is wide, that's where we can problem solve. Stan Tatkin, who some of you may be familiar with, he is a couples therapist who's written a book called Wired for Love and talks about this dance of the nervous system, social connection in relationship. He has some language around creating this trustworthiness and safety as a form of enhancing social connection relationally. He calls the part of us that is able to problem solve our ambassadors. So we can enact diplomacy. And when our window is thin and we're operating from our limbic systems, rather than acting as ambassadors to other human beings, we're acting more warlike. So instead of being allies to each other, we become adversaries. And I was thinking, as I was preparing for this talk today, mindful self-compassion is a way of becoming an ally to yourself rather than an adversary to yourself. And you can see the positive feedback loop between self-regulation and social connection. When we feel safe in our nervous system from the practices and automatic responses that come from self-soothing, we then transmit that sense of safety to others. And then we can form those social connections with a little more ease. That sense of belonging, those pro-social behaviors that make us feel connected to others, help us regulate our own nervous system. And co-regulation, here's my theory, is a merger of the two. We are regulating in community. We are regulating inside of social connection. When my nervous system is at ease, when your nervous system is at ease, we can have those crucial conversations that can enhance our relationships. Win, 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 win. So I'm a couples counselor, family therapist. This makes a lot of sense to me why these practices are so important. And then we could take that a little bit wider, right? Imagine a world where people were accessing these practices for safety in their own nervous system, had the ability to stay regulated in adversarial, possibly adversarial contexts. Maybe there's some active hope there, which I'll touch into in a moment, and then we'll stop the screen share and get to have some conversation. But just to go a little bit deeper into this theory that I'm offering up today. accessing all the ways we can access to create some safety, to increase our capacity, to like maybe slim the margin of our negativity bias. So much is being communicated by our tone of voice. Stephen Porges calls it prosody, our body language. But even more subtle than this are the cues of our nervous system that we're registering consciously and unconsciously, body to body, even across the screen. This happens, which is kind of amazing. We can actually help regulate the nervous system of another, saying it again, by regulating ourselves. And this is called co-regulation. There's a widely quoted statistic that has been debunked, but a statistic that 80% of what we're communicating is through our bodies, through neuroception. We have our perception, five senses, how we're navigating through the world through sight, taste, smell, sound, and feeling, touch. I think I got that right. I might have doubled up on some, but these ones, I think we all know, the five senses. Proprioception is our sense of our body in space, which can be challenging for some folks. And then there's interoception also, which is heightened through our mindfulness practice, a sense of our organs at work, our digestion, our heart beating. We can become much more highly sensitive to these internal functionings of our body through our mindfulness practice. And then there's neuroception. And anecdotally, I can say I definitely have increased attunement with the nervous systems of other folks who I come into contact with through the practice of tuning into my own, that sense of a tight throat, heart, or belly when I'm feeling like I need to defend myself, that swollenness that we can sometimes feel. But there was a period in my life where it was all just intellectual and cognitive. I couldn't really tap in to that body sense. Mindful awareness practices helped me enhance that. So there's a promise of the practice. Neuroception is our nervous system's ability to sense safety or threat, that closing or opening. We often hear the language of opening the heart. Our heart feels open when we're safe. Our heart feels closed when we're protecting ourselves. Really, I equate that to neuroception, a sense of safety, that glimmer, that sense of ease in the body when we need it. That is neuroception. So yeah, let me see if there's just a couple more things I want to say here. A little straw breath. I think, well, let me quickly, I was naming these things, but in case attuning to your own nervous system responses feels a little inaccessible, I do like to share this slide. When we're under stress, here are some of the physiological things that are happening beyond our conscious control, our heart rates going up. When we're stressed out, we breathe from like the diaphragm up. That's why it can be so helpful to do lower belly breathing when we want to calm down. Our digestive system can shut down. When we're in stress, when we're in threat, we need to get out of danger quickly. So a lot of our functions slow down or speed up. When we're out of danger, we relax. The breath becomes deeper. Our heart rate gets back to normal. Our gut's active. So here, left and right, are some of the ways it might make more sense as I'm naming what it's like in the physical body to feel that neuroception of stress versus the neuroception of safety. And just to finish with this idea from the late, great Joanna Macy, who talks about active hope. I feel there's a great deal of hope when we can create simple shifts in our nervous system through self-regulation practices, through relational mindfulness, in community with other human beings, using the wisdom of our body to create more compassion for ourselves, be our best allies rather than adversaries. I feel this creates a lot of active hope. It's not saving the world. There are a lot of ways that I trust and know everyone makes a difference in their own hearts, minds, bodies, and communities. But this little shift in restoring some agency to our nervous system when we have some awareness of being activated by something somewhere off in the distance in the future, or when our mind wanders to the past, if we can bring our awareness back to the present moment, to what's going on in our body, when we have a moment of glimmer where we can actively pay attention to that ease and start to accumulate more and more moments throughout our day where we're accessing a little bit of ease and rest in the nervous system, it will help us cultivate a little more sturdiness, a little more ease in the body, so that we might be able to feel the resource, the capacity that we genuinely have as resilient, amazing human beings. Restoring agency first in the body to me is an incredibly hopeful act. So I'll end my speech, my talk, and stop the share with the invitation to look for the glimmers and to see how that might shift something in your daily life. And I'm going to stop the share. And I just would love either in the chat or if you want to raise your hand with the hand raise symbol so that I can get to folks and see that folks would like to discuss any inquiry, any questions, any reflections. I'm here for it. Zilla, and I hope I'm saying your name right. Yes, it's being recorded right now. So yeah, reflections, folks. Maybe just in the chat.
It was
Hiroki.
great.
Oh, Ellen. I don't know who wants to, Ellen.
Yes, it was wonderful. Thanks.
I wonder how the practice was for people. Were you able to access any ease? And there's no right answer, but were you able to access any ease in your body in any way, any softening, any relaxation?
Not for me today. I'm not feeling so good, but I definitely can relate to this, and it was can really be helpful. And I think through being several years now with UCLA Mindful, I've learned to do it, you know, but it's so good to keep hearing it and being reminded. Thank you.
And I'm sure there was a lot of review and revisiting of concepts today. So I appreciate all of you. This is something I kind of can't get enough of trying to access a little ease. So, yeah. Hiroki.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So, for the glimmer practice, is it recommended to sort of have that in mind throughout my day and either notice it or intend to repeat it a few times a day for like a complete, I'm not familiar with the practice, but polyvagal or somatic experiencing? Or yoga or mindfulness. I'm not familiar with the field yet, but it's interesting.
Well, welcome. I'm glad you've walked in the door. And Hiroki, have you had the opportunity to take any UCLA mindful awareness practice classes?
Yes.
Okay. So are you familiar with the concept of formal and informal practice that's
Yeah.
in those classes? So I would say a glimmer practice is exactly the same. There's a formal way to practice it, which is what we did today. We sat down, we actively visualized glimmers in memory, glimmers on the screen, you know, the invitation to bring that witnessing to your experience as a guided visualization. And glimmers really, like I learned about this practice through Deb Dana, She talks about them as an informal practice. Well, she doesn't call it informal. That's like from our mindful awareness practice context. But she might be someone useful to check out. She has a newsletter called Glimmers, and she talks about how when we experience them, like to really tap into what we're feeling in our body, to start pairing the body sensation with the experience of like, oh, that was just such a sweet moment that I just had. And there's your informal practice on the go. A glimmer arises and you pay attention to it and you pair that with that feeling of ease in your body. And it starts. So Dan Siegel says, what fires together, wires together. So if you start witnessing like light dancing on the water, light coming through clouds, or whatever it is for you, these like my glimmers, and you start pairing that with like, oh, I feel that, it can really enhance, sort of bold and underline. Somatic means body, like the feeling in your body. It can really amplify that sense of ease. And in that moment, we soften. We so often unconsciously are bracing ourselves and actually causing ourselves harm. There's this concept of ahimsa, nonviolence to self and others. And I really think we can cause a lot of harm to ourselves when we're unconsciously scanning for threat, only scanning for threat, only bracing, only protecting and defending. The body, the stress response, we know wreaks havoc on our bodies. So again, it's not about avoiding or just, but we do need to create and restore some balance, softness in the shoulders. So practices like yoga, practices like attuning, allowing ourselves to have responses to difficult things, but then also pair that or have opportunities to feel at ease and to really savor them, can be very wholesome for the heart, the mind, the soul, the emotional body, whatever you want to call it. So I hope that helps. But there's formal and informal, and yes, accumulate. I really like the idea of keeping a journal, a glimmer journal. I'll assign that to my therapy clients. Like, let's see what, if you notice them in the day. And you can make it a more formal practice. Like, there are lots of ways to play with this.
The image of the snow, I think I was able to most like resonate with that, like the attuning with the glimmer experience. Is that something like you would say that is aligned with what you understand as this practice, or am I just making an association?
No, that's a glimmer for you, I think, Hiroki. Yeah, I
So
love seeing that glimmer on the snow, right? And it feels peaceful. It's just so nice in the body. Yeah. And I want to make sure I'm not missing some comments in the chat.
thank you.
Thank you so much, Hiroki. I know your questions were very useful to the group at large. So thank you. And I'm reading Tiffany. Yeah, it can feel really hard in a lot of spaces to feel a sense of belonging. Oh, well, I'm gonna provide a lot of contact information when we get to the end of our time together. So if anyone wants to reach out with me, and I even offer like free 15-minute consultations, I'm happy to make that space offline in the group, because that's such a hard way to move through the world, and I've been there. But I'll offer up some ways we could email or ways to connect offline. Oh, I like this, Paula. God winks. Yeah, I like that. And since you went there, in my family, those rays of sunshine that come out of the clouds, we would call angel slides. I don't know if anybody else. So it was like the angels were taking little slides on the rays of light that come through the clouds. Thank you, George. Yeah, it's hard to find the right body position. I think like I often teach in this way, like, find a position that's going to work for you. Maybe it's lying down. Maybe it's walking. Maybe it's standing. It is not one size fits all. And when we can minimize distractions in the body, it can help us stick with our practice when we're uncomfortable in our body. It's very hard to return to something that doesn't feel good. And part of our practice is learning how to build capacity to stay with challenging situations. It's the both and, it's the paradox of our practice. And then Serena is sharing where the recordings are shared. Marta, what do you suggest to help the vagus nerve with breathing techniques for people who are in constant fight or flight to help lower blood pressure? Well, this one is near and dear to me. One of the most salient benefits of my mindfulness practice is that I was able to go off high blood pressure medication about 12 years ago. I had had a pretty major surgery due to a thyroid cancer, and I had high blood pressure afterwards. That's not, I'm not exactly, I'm sorry, I'm talking about myself. I'm not exactly answering your question yet. But just anecdotally, and there's a whole body of research behind this, lowering blood pressure is one of the benefits of this practice. Breathing practices, specifically straw breath, Valoma breathing. And again, I'm going to share some resources because I offer a weekly mindful yoga class online that's on the ground. That's whole intention is to bring the parasympathetic nervous system online. There's all kinds of yoga. My class is very much a mindful awareness practice paired with breath work and yoga to calm the body and the nervous system. So I don't have enough time to maybe go into a lot of practices, but Stephen Porges very simply says, if we can just make our out breath longer than our in breath, that's a place to start, Marta. It's just a starting place. Slowing down that out breath. And I'm like, I'm not a hypnotist, but slow down the out breath. And I have a little practice if we have time that is a polyvagal body scan that I wanted to end with. So I'm going to try to save like 7 minutes at the end, and I'll weave in a little breathing. But we can start with slowing down the out breath. Marielle, yes, I know winter, like I'm going into mourning a little bit because I feel fall happening. Yes, in Santa Fe, we have snow, we have four seasons, we have winter, we have sunshine, but I do kind of brace myself for winter every year. And I'm really negativity bias. I am really trying to shift my orientation towards winter to find the glimmers and the cozy. And I never pronounce this right. HYGGE, 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 the practice of getting cozy and warm. I think it's Danish, right? Somebody correct me. Somebody fact check me. Is it Norwegian or Danish? I'm not sure. But Danish. Thank you, Paula. That, you know, like wearing sweater weather and fires. We can learn to love winter through the cozy and the sorry, I can't pronounce it. All right, I'm coming back through. Yes, everyday actions can be treated as part of my practice. I love that Joanna Macy quote for that very reason. It's like, is it hopeful? Yes, to me, that I just went from, you know, a 10 to an 8 because I took a straw breath. You know, is it hopeful to me that I didn't get in a fight with my teenager because I went to good old stop. I stopped. I took a breath. I observed. I looked at the color of their eyes. I looked at the expression on their face. I saw the rhythm of their breath, and it slowed me down so I could proceed as my wise adult mom rather than lizard mom. Yeah, that's hopeful. That's active hope to me. Chris says, I felt glimmers through practicing mindfulness. Are glimmers and mindfulness the same thing or just very interconnected? Very interconnected. And I would say I would love to have like a whole hour conversation on this Because we have our metta practices, we have our loving kindness practices, we have the Brahma Viharas that are intended to cultivate states of heart. I would say glimmer practice is a secular heart quality of heart practice. It's not directly under the umbrella of joy or equanimity, mudita or equanimity, or mudita is vicarious joy. We have loving kindness and we have compassion. Glimmers are sort of in their own neurobiological category, more of a secular mindfulness practice, but I think akin to these practices that cultivate a kind of heart state. I think it's a practice that cultivates a nervous system state. Mindfulness and these heart states, like with mindfulness, we're not striving to get anywhere. We're witnessing the moment as it is. And yet, it's very dialectical. And yet, our mindfulness practice can lead us to these very blissful states, but that's not the intention. And I think this paradox is why we practice. It's the novelty that keeps us going. It's this, wait, there's more I need to understand that keeps us coming back. So it's like, yes, and when we're mindful, we can notice and savor those moments of bliss with a little more enhanced capacity. But those moments of bliss are not mindfulness themselves. So let's keep talking. Rick Hansen's TED Talk on, I need to watch this. Thank you for sharing. Winter's a toughie, but some people love winter. Yee. And Steph says recognizing glimmers in gratitude practice for sure. She reminds herself of glimmers at the end of the day when she thinks about everything in the day that made her feel grateful. It's gonna make me cry. Dolphins swimming in the ocean, getting a phone call from a loved one, getting a foam heart in my latte, etc. I love that. That's a glimmer for me. I want to put some resources in the chat, and I really would love for anyone who wants to share something more. I had a teacher once at the end of meetings where there was a Q&A, he would say, now really, if there's anything that you're going to regret not saying later, say it now. So while I put the resources in the chat, maybe you can think about that invitation, but no pressure. Okay. I got a lot of resources I'm about to put in here. So here we go. Thank you, Hiroki. All right, so I do want to end with a practice, and I really would love to make space for more voices. But I just want to share these things. Steph is a part of the Collective Care Club, and Annie and Jennifer, who I said hi to, they're all facilitators. We have daily mindfulness sits that are free. If you're a member of the UCLA community, I'm giving you the sis deal, the bro deal, the sis deal, the person deal. If you click on this membership thing, and if you want to donate and pay for membership, we're very grateful. But if you'd like to join for free, you can use the code CCC-free because we're really wanting to build community and create spaces where you feel that you can belong. We feel like it's the cheers of mindfulness, where everybody knows your name. So please, the whole thing is cultivating community and a sense of belonging. We'd love to have you join. I got a couple of retreats. If anyone wants to go on retreat with me here in Santa Fe in October, and then in Ireland a year from now. My yoga class, the link's there. So it's 3 to 4:30 Pacific time, and you just have to navigate to the Monday to join that. If you want to see daily sunrises, glimmers, deep thoughts, please follow me on Instagram. I wake up and take a picture of the sunrise every darn day. That's my glimmer to start my day every darn day, wherever I am. And if I'm exhausted, I'll wake up, I'll take the picture, I'll go back to bed. But if you want to get a sunrise in the morning, please follow me there at Hello Wellness Therapy. Actually, it's just L at Hello Wellness Therapy. There's no dot com. I messed that up. And then you can just look at my website for therapy, coaching, all this good stuff. Okay. That's the end of the shameless plugs, but I really want to offer all these resources. Well, I'm glad, Hiroki. Yeah. So let's end with a little practice. Does that feel good to people? Yay. Okay. All right, folks. So the invitation once again. I know it can be so difficult to feel comfortable in our bodies. So it's sometimes we just have to imagine a day when, or imagine a day in the past when we did. We can use the practice of seeing if we can find a neutral place in the body. For some folks, it's the palms of the hands. You could clasp your hands together, squeeze the hands together. That can be neutral for some, not all. Maybe it's pressing the palms of the hands into the thighs. Maybe it's the scalp. Is there some neutral place in the body? And if not, just compassion for where you are today, compassion for self, compassion for you. Finding a neutral place, close your eyes if it feels comfortable. If not, find an external resource like we discussed in your environment. Maybe there's a window you can look out of, something outside the self. And again, if it's difficult to be inside this physical body or in this mind, it takes us to unhelpful places. Seeing if you can attune your attention to something outside yourself and really take in the shape of it. Focus the gaze. Focus the gaze. Maybe there's a beautiful picture. Maybe there's something with eyes closed in your mind's eye that can stimulate that sense of ease in your physical body. Breathe in, breathe out, recenter on the heart and on the breath. You're always welcome to place a hand on the heart or the belly. Us mammals like to be warm. We like a soothing touch. And we like a kind, gentle voice. These are universals for mammals. We can give these to ourselves. So, just in this moment, a kind, soothing touch. Breathe in, breathe out. And I'll invite you to follow along with me with some practices that can bring some ease and soothing in a physical way to your body. If it feels comfortable, placing a hand on your forehead. And then notice in the front axis of your body, throat, heart, belly, what comes alive for you? What do you notice? And take the other hand and place it around the back of your head. You can open your eyes for a moment to see the instructions on the screen. We're cradling the occipital lobes of the head where the cranium connects with the top of the neck. So a hand on the forehead, a hand on the back of the head. This can be a lovely practice at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., when the mind wakes up and wants to solve all the problems of the world, individual and collective. A hand on the back of the head, a hand on the forehead. So many bundles of cranial nerves weaving under the hands. Switch the hands and see what that's like. Place the opposite hand on the forehead, opposite hand on those occipital lobes. Breathe in, maybe a straw breath. Release the hand that's on the forehead back to the heart. Release the hand that's on the back of the head, if it feels comfortable, down to the lower abdomen, the belly button, play with that. Notice what you notice. Is there any ease, throat, heart, belly? The central channel. spinal cord, nervous system, vagus nerve. And now switch hands, see if this formation is more soothing to you. Now, the invitation to place the hand that's on the belly on top of the other hand. And practicing gentle voice, soothing touch. Hopefully, you're the right temperature. If not, maybe get to a cozy place after this session. And the invitation to pat the lower hand with the hand on that's on top. And offer the following words to yourself. There, there. There, there. Find stillness with the hands on the heart. Breathe in, breathe out. Remember to soften. See if you can bring the breath deeper into the lower abdomen. And now place the hands anywhere that serves you as we bring this practice to a close. May we all live in peace. May we all have understanding. May we all find places for belonging and connection and safety. May we all know ease in our being. And may all beings everywhere, without exception, be free from suffering. And be well, everyone. I'm so grateful for your practice, for joining me today. May it be of benefit to you. Be well.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.